Images of the Empire using Noah as a slave entered his mind, enraging him. If they ever got their hands on her, they would imprison her and find a way to tap into her immense power. The mistress would suck her dry like a parasite. "Then we have a dilemma," Ashrael said, his tone hard and clipped. "Clearly, you need me to infiltrate the palace undetected and kill the Empress. But clearly, Noah and I cannot be apart because of our bond. But there is no way in Cain's hells I'm allowing her to set foot on the surface of that cursed dark planet. I would die before I allow her to fall into their hands. I would kill all of them." Trying to control the sudden fury that swept through him, Ashrael made a fist with his left hand, drawing out his claws. Thankfully, they had given him claws with this artificial limb, but as they dug into his palm, there was no pain, and he didn't bleed. The thought of giving Noah up to them made him seethe with irrational anger, because he knew how they would treat a human. He'd seen the way the mistress treated her slaves.
"You have the fever," Acadian remarked mildly. "A relationship with a human can be a wonderful thing if you are willing to accept the challenge. They tend to bring out long-buried instincts that we Cordolians seem to have forgotten we possess."
"If you understand this so well, why are you thrusting me into an impossible situation?"
"The Empire must fall," Acadian said. "I have come to realize now that there is no alternative. Otherwise, the rot will continue to fester, and eventually they will destroy us all."
He inclined his head, his expression unreadable.
"There may be a way to keep Nuali within the radius of your bond without endangering her. Besides, do you not want to use this opportunity to kill your mistress as well and break the mind bond once and for all?"
Hope and anger swirled through Ashrael in equal amounts. Part of him wanted to tell Acadian to fuck off. He secretly considered stealing Noah away and escaping to some distant part of the universe. But that was merely a fantasy. The Empire would come for them, no matter where they went. And there were entire races that would see him dead purely because of the fact that he was Cordolian. Without a vessel or a crew backing them up, they would be in constant danger, and even he could only kill so many. The general was offering him freedom, but he had to fight for it. Nothing in the universe was freely given. Everything had its price.
"I have my terms," he said quietly, as everything around him became still.
A calmness settled over him, bringing with it a strange sense of destiny.
"And those are?"
"I will deliver Vian Kazharan's head to you, but I also get to kill the mistress. Her head is mine. Secondly, the contents of the hidden library beneath the Palace of Arches is to be mine. And finally, you will do everything in your power to keep my Sarian safe. If any threat reaches her, if anything happens to her, if I find so much as a scratch on her, I will find a way to kill you myself." He bared his fangs. "There are only so many near misses you can survive, General."
"I would not expect any less of you, Katach."
To Ashrael's surprise, there was a note of respect in Acadian's voice.
"We have some way to go before we reach Sector 1. If Nuali is as powerful as Elgin says, then she will benefit from some training. I hear there are ways you can strengthen your bond and increase its radius. If you can do that, she will not have to leave silence at all. Perhaps you can work on that. The bastard smiled. Ashrael returned his amused look with a dark glare, but a strange sense of relief was spreading through him. For the first time in his cursed life, he had a purpose.
I will think on it, he snapped, rising out of his seat. I make no promises, but I will consider your proposal.
It wasn't the actual assignment that daunted him. It was the thought that Noah could be placed in some kind of danger. He couldn't allow that. Humans weren't supposed to exist in their world, and Kithia was the cruelest of all planets.
He cursed the general for being a convincing bastard and went in search of his Saurian.
After all, he had unfinished business to attend to. Chapter 22.
Oh, Noah, Abby whispered, ushering her into the room. Come and sit down.
Noah blinked, taking stock of her surroundings as her eyes adjusted to the light. She was in the only part of silence that looked even remotely human. She stood in an oval-shaped room, bordered on one side by a long window. In the distance, Earth was a glowing orb of blue and green, decorated with white swirls of cloud. Noah had never been into orbit before. The sight of her beautiful home planet abruptly brought tears to her eyes, and she blinked furiously, annoyed at herself for getting stupidly sentimental. It's just that she was so fucking close to happiness right now. It was all because of Ashrael. He made her feel that way. Noah stepped into the light, and after hours spent skulking around in the darkened corridors of this sinister alien ship, it was glorious. The room had clearly been decorated with Abby's personal touches. Bright lights hung from the ceiling, simulating daylight. And plants, actual green plants, had been installed into the walls, surrounding them with lush foliage. In the center of the room was a large wooden table, surrounded by a motley collection of chairs. It was laden with delicious-looking treats, cupcakes, earth fruits, and other strange but delectable-looking morsels she didn't recognize. Abby's daughter was nestled in a crib, asleep, and gathered around the table were four other women. Noah recognized Sira, who offered her a sunny smile. She didn't know the dark-skinned woman who was working away on a portable holoscreen, hundreds of characters and numbers streaming across her data lenses. She glanced up and offered Noah a shy smile.
Hey, Noah. I'm Rihanna. Please forgive me if I'm a bit preoccupied. I'm freaking out right now. Just trying to map a course so we can track where we're going. I have to know for myself.
She shared a knowing glance with the other women.
Kale won't tell me anything. All he's told me is that we're not safe on Earth right now.
She let out a sigh of frustration.
Ugh, he always does this.
Noah nodded in greeting as Rihanna turned back to her screen and began to plug in some data. Her attention turned to the other two, whom she'd encountered only briefly.
The statuesque, rather intimidating-looking woman with cropped blonde hair was called Erin. Beside her sat a petite woman with jet-black hair and sharp brown eyes, Gia.
"Welcome to the Cordolian Wives Club," she laughed, before waving her hand to indicate she wasn't serious. "Only kidding. This part of the ship has officially been colonized by us, humans only. We need to have a space that feels a little like home, don't you think?"
Her petite nose wrinkled in distaste.
"Cordolians have no sense of aesthetics. I think it's because they're so used to living in darkness. If we're going to be holed up here for a little while, we have to make this place habitable."
She shook her head in frustration.
"I swear, I could have found us somewhere safe on Earth.
but Callan seems to think it's too dangerous for us to be anywhere but here for the time being. He's in uber-protective mode for some reason.
Something's going down, Aaron added. I haven't seen Rickle this edgy since we were on the Hendrix II. The problem is, these boys are too secretive for their own good, and whatever it is, we have no choice to go along with it because you just know it's going to be something humans can't handle. I thought Zargek were bad. She shuddered. And these Empire guys sound no better. From what I've heard, they're all certified psychopaths.
We'll get the truth out of them eventually, Sira said, projecting calmness. Noah almost envied her. She picked a gleaming red apple from a basket and took a bite out of it.
Don't worry. Zal's terrible at keeping secrets from me. He'll break sooner or later. They always do. In the meantime, I'm not going to argue with Zal. The one thing I've learned is that if they say it's dangerous, it's usually 10 times worse than we think. So for now, I'm going to bunker down and see what happens next.
I think the fact that the Silent Ones managed to get so close has rattled all of them. They don't like being beaten at their own game. Tarak's the worst. He has to be lord and master of his own little domain. Otherwise, he becomes plain insufferable. I think not being in control actually gives him anxiety.
Abby frowned, a troubled look entering her eyes as she shook her head.
You know, I once swore I'd never go back to Sector 1. But I understand his reasons for wanting to keep me close. And I understand why he wants to finish things once and for all. Right now, silence is the safest place we can be.
A look of disquiet crossed her face.
Tarak once told me that I'm his greatest weakness and his greatest strength, and that if anyone ever tried to use me against him, he'd lose it, and that wouldn't be good for the 9 galaxies.
I can totally identify with that, Gia agreed.
For a moment, they were all silent, lost in their own private musings. Then Gia turned to Noah, breaking the silence.
Noah, grab a seat. There are lemon and vanilla cupcakes and Veronian sweets. You have to try the Veronian stuff. It's mind-blowing.
I was meaning to give you the lowdown on Cordolians back when we were on Earth, but it turned out my timing wasn't so good.
Abby pulled a chair and sat, folding one leg so that her bare foot was resting on the seat.
Unfortunately, we were rudely interrupted by invisible assassins and my hungry little monster, and since then, I hear you've been a little busy.
Maybe, Noah said cautiously, not wanting to give away too much. Without thinking, she reached out to Ashrael through their bond. He responded with a gentle burst of warmth.
I will find you.
The first thing you need to know about Cordolians is that they're misunderstood.
Abby placed a few treats on a plate and slid it across to Noah.
They're not innately evil, but they've been indoctrinated into a fairly harsh, authoritarian culture. My husband is getting better at understanding certain things, like actually talking things through instead of killing first and asking questions later. But it takes time.
Because, or maybe despite their background, Aaron added, they are insanely protective, almost to the point where it becomes pathological. If anyone ever tries to fuck with you, say a little prayer for that poor soul, because a Cordolian will do scary things to keep a girl safe.
She regarded Noah with an even blue stare.
Scary things. Trust me.
The 5 women all nodded sagely as they nibbled on their snacks. Sira picked up an auto pot and started pouring green tea into small porcelain cups. Noah shuddered, but it wasn't out of fear. It was because she could easily imagine Ashrael doing said scary things, and she didn't mind. Was that a bad thing? Gia nodded towards Noah's plate. Try one of these. They're amazing. A smile tugged at her lips as an indulgent expression crossed her face. They can be stubborn, extremely stubborn. The other three women nodded. But sometimes they will listen to reason. You just have to explain it in a way that they understand. There are ways, Abby agreed with a wink. Trust me, there are ways. Oh, and they are extraordinarily good lovers, Sarah said in a low conspiratorial voice. Just don't tell any of them I said that. Heat rose in Noah's cheeks. I wouldn't know about that. Why were they even telling her all this stuff? She wondered how much gossip had been exchanged on her behalf. Damn Ashrael and his shamelessness. They're actually big softies at heart, Rihanna added quietly, barely glancing up from her screen. But absolutely do not tell any of them I said that. Noah valiantly fought her rising blush as she thought of Ashrael. In an attempt to distract herself, she popped one of the Veronian sweets in her mouth. It was a crystalline cube with a blossoming purple and orange nebula in the center. Oh, she gasped in surprise, as an explosion of flavor sent her into Epicurean ecstasy. It was sweetness, with notes of jasmine, honey, blackberry, and a hint of spice. Holy moly, she blurted, and the human women laughed. They're like drugs, aren't they? Gia teased. Once you've had one, you'll never be able to give them up. That seems to be a recurring theme around here, Noah said softly. Soon, Ashrael would come for her, and she knew that once that happened, she would be forever lost.
Chapter 23 He came for her as she lay in her bed. They'd allocated her a room near the other humans, away from the busier areas of the warship. It was a fully operational battle cruiser, after all, and she'd been warned to stay away from the bridge and the command areas. Her bed wasn't a bed. It was more of a cocoon-like pod. It was dark and strange, and it took a little getting used to. But it came with the softest sheets she'd ever slept in. She was ensconced in darkness, wrapped up in the mysterious organic substance of this dark alien craft. The door was apparently coded to her biological signature, meaning only she could exit and enter the room, and Noah found that incredibly reassuring. For someone who'd spent the greater part of a year locked up in a cell in a creepy medical facility, she was adjusting to her surroundings surprisingly well. The room seemed to protectively wrap itself around her, and it was blissfully silent. The only thing she could hear was the music in her head, and after struggling for so long to get it back, wondering if she would ever play again, it was glorious. She revisited Bach and Beethoven and Chopin and Liszt and Rachmaninoff and every single one of her favorite composers in between, reliving memories of her past life. She'd been a freak with a prodigious memory and a pair of oversized hands. She was the only living person who could play some of the pieces in her head. Music that had been written in a time when humankind couldn't even fathom the existence of aliens. And she'd been called many things. Genius, virtuoso, flamboyant, eccentric. Her fingers moved as she closed her eyes and played out the tune currently swirling in her head. Liszt's Sonetto 104 del Petrarca. She was curled up in the fetal position, her body aching with unfulfilled need. because thoughts of Ashrael were driving her mad. Maybe it was just her imagination, but she thought she could feel him beside her.
Where are you?
Here.
Her eyes flew open, but she could only make out the faintest outline of his form as he flowed towards her, merged with the darkness.
Am I dreaming? She said aloud, and he laughed softly.
No, my Saurian, you are not.
How did you get in? I thought that door only opened for me.
If it were anyone else, she would have been freaked out. But Ashrael, she'd been waiting for him.
I have my ways. Remember, I tasted you. Your biosig is on me.
Oh.
He materialized in her bed, his warm, sinuous body curving around hers. He flowed like water in the darkness. Clearly, he was in his element.
Why do you have such finely honed hands, Noah?
What do you mean?
He took her hands into his and stroked her fingers, sending a blissful shiver down her spine.
You have long fingers and strong tendons. The small muscles between the fine bones of your hands are well developed. Your wrists are taut, yet flexible.
He stroked her arms, his touch making her wet.
Despite your delicate appearance, your arms are strong, yet you are not a fighter.
He curled up behind her, wrapping his arms around her torso. Only the thin sheet separated them. He was deliciously warm.
Are you an artisan?
Oh, how observant he was.
A musician, she corrected. At least, I was, before I was abducted by my own people and given this. She tapped her head. We humans aren't supposed to be telepaths. But they said I was the perfect specimen. Years of musical practice had developed certain parts of my brain, parts they wanted to tap into. I still don't understand what they did, but none of us were prepared for the aftermath. She shuddered as she remembered those terrible early days when she'd woken up from the surgery and everything had been different. She hadn't known who she was or where she was, and she'd been terrified.
A musician.
His voice was subdued and imbued with awe.
I have heard of this thing called music. You can create it with your hands?
For some reason, that seemed to impress him a hell of a lot. And an instrument called a piano, Noah added, suddenly longing for the feel and sound of the keys. It's a temperamental beast of wood and metal.
I would give anything to hear you do this. Music.
I don't know if I can play anymore, she admitted. After they did the surgery on me, I couldn't hold a tune in my head for such a long time.
When we return to Earth, you will show me where to find the people who did this to you, Ashrael whispered, his breath feathering her ear. And I will kill them.
Oh, that's,
rather sweet and terrifying. He didn't seem to understand that her species generally didn't think it was acceptable to go around killing whoever they pleased.
Ashrael nuzzled her neck, planting soft, tender kisses on her sensitive skin. He nibbled her ear, his sharp fangs grazing her skin, but never breaking it. She moaned as their auras merged. She could sense his desire, and it stoked her need. She extended her legs and entwined them with his, their bodies meeting through the silken fabric of the sheets. With a soft growl, Ashrael pulled the sheet away, and all of a sudden, he was a millimeter closer to her, his bare skin pressing against hers.
"You're naked," she gasped.
He chuckled softly, pulling her into him. His hard cock pressed against the small of her back, and his cockwee swirled around her, a constant ripple of gentle, toe-curling energy that pulsated across their bond.
"So are you."
His voice was a dark rumble inside her head.
"Almost," she agreed. She was in her underwear, but nothing else.
He ran his hands down her flat stomach, sliding them beneath the waistband of her panties, tracing tiny swirls across her delicate skin, running the pads of his fingers through the fine tuft of hair that covered her sex. He ran a finger over her clit. She gasped, writhing in pleasure. He slipped his finger inside her and found her wet.
"I know what you want," he said, his voice silky and self-assured. "I can feel it. I can taste your pleasure and your arousal."
His mental touch feathered around the edges of her mind.
"Let me in."
She hesitated, unsure of herself.
"It will be so good for both of us."
He slid his finger back and forth, stroking her. All Noah could do was lean into his embrace as he moved deeper, faster, exploring her moist entrance with two fingers now, stretching her.
"Oh,"
she moaned, forgetting where she was, forgetting the terrible things that had happened to her. But she couldn't forget who she was with. He surrounded her with his body and his scent and his unmistakable, undeniable presence. He stroked her gently, taking his time, bringing his other hand up to her chin, caressing her jawline and her neck and her two prominent collarbones, before tracing a line down to her breasts. His fingers grazed one of her nipples, and it stiffened in response to his touch. Noah's back was pressed against his torso. He was like warm granite wrapped in velvet, impossibly strong and hard, yet sinfully soft. He was drawing out her pleasure, awakening her long dormant desire. She could lose herself in his embrace and never wake up from this magnificent dream. Noah sighed as he went deeper, a coil of pleasure unfurling in her core. He seemed to know exactly where she wanted to be touched. He seemed to know exactly how fast, how hard, and how long his sensual strokes should be.
"Turn around," he murmured, the palm of his hand curving over her pussy. "I want to touch your face. I want to see you."
He guided her gently, and she rolled over to face him, relying on touch more than sight. His fingers were still buried deep inside her. He was still caressing her, sending ripples of pleasure through her body. With his other hand, his new hand, he touched her face, reverently, taking in every minute detail. His engineered fingers, organic or cybernetic, she wasn't sure, were warm and gentle.
"I never tire of seeing you like this,"
he whispered in her mind. She stared back and saw only darkness, but she could feel him all around her. He pressed a finger against her lips, and she took it into her mouth, feeling the retracted point of his claw-like nail, harmless to her at present, and the calloused pad of his fingertip. She teased him, making small circles with the tip of her tongue. He moaned, a low, hoarse, primal sound. His aura softened and swirled, indicating that he found her actions most pleasing. Emboldened, she reached down and took his cock into her hand. It was wet at the tip, She gently slid back his foreskin, thumbing the smooth head of his cock, making slow, sensual circles. He quivered, his aura turning into the psychic equivalent of molten caramel, delicious and sinful. When he felt good, she felt good. She understood it now. Their pleasure was mutual. She just needed to allow his responses to guide her. She could feel his reaction to her touch through their bond. He growled as she took his erection into her hand, curling her fingers around its hard, ridged length. "Oh my," she whispered, stroking him with tenderness and strength. In return, he fucked her gently with his fingers. She basked in the warm glow of his presence, reveling in the sounds of his pleasure. His voice was low and deep, and as smooth as honey, and she loved it when he groaned with pleasure. It was music to her ears. Still, she wanted more. She moved closer, taking his dexterous hand by the wrist. Even though it pained her to do so, she gently withdrew his fingers from her pussy. For a moment, she rubbed them against her clit, stealing little jolts of pleasure before she withdrew his hand altogether and brought herself closer to him. She guided the tip of his cock towards her until it teased her entrance, grazing her throbbing clit. As they connected, his energy surged through her like a current of electricity. It was insistent and demanding.
"Let me in."
At last, she understood what he meant. Her body was tuned to his blissful frequency, and she was ready to let go. There was no effort involved. She simply followed her instincts and allowed bliss to fill her mind.
With a low, guttural groan, he grabbed her by the hips and surged forward, slamming inside her with a sudden, wild intensity that took her breath away.
Searing pleasure shot through her, and she lost herself in his presence as he thrust deep, claiming her with a long, passionate kiss as his hard length moved back and forth, the ridges of his cock gliding against her clit, making her whimper and moan. He moved faster and faster, his strong hands caressing her back as he ground into her, and Noah knew nothing but the darkness and the brilliant light of his soul. She twined her fingers into his braids, running her hands through his hair and down his neck, down the muscular, sinuous planes of his back, pulling herself into him, drowning in his aura, his warmth, his power. They moved back and forth, their bodies entwined, their energies surging together as they moved as one, their wild sensual dance taking on a life of its own as they fed off each other's pleasure. Ashrael gripped her ass, his fingers digging into her soft flesh, his cries becoming louder as he gave her what she so desperately craved. He gave her himself, and she responded in kind by letting go completely. She opened up her mind to his presence and to the endless darkness. She felt the energy swirling around them, and she felt his need, his pleasure, and the climax growing inside him. It mirrored hers, and she knew exactly what to do. She wrapped her legs around him, allowing her body to move to his rhythm. Faster.
Faster.
Harder.
Harder.
Their thoughts became one. Their auras surged, joining together at some deep, primal level. They fucked. They drowned in each other. They climaxed together, crying out in speech and in thought.
And what was left unvoiced was the most powerful, for the bond between their minds came full circle, connecting them beyond the physical. For one short, sublime moment, they connected with the energies of the universe, and they ceased to exist, and there was nothing but infinity and silence. Then, the stars came crashing down around them, and Noah was in her bed again, coated in a fine sheen of sweat, held in the arms of her dark, sensual lover. Ashrael let out a growl of deep satisfaction and held her tightly, and Noah wondered how the hell she could ever have been afraid of losing herself to him. Losing herself to him wasn't a bad thing at all.
Chapter 24. As the days passed, she stopped counting them as days and began to consider the passage of time as units of distance. Things moved at a different speed out in the far reaches of space. Here, day and night didn't exist. There was just the endless expanse of the universe, dotted with distant, glittering stars. And every time they reached a new sector, they would orbit around some random outpost, a planet, or sometimes a moon, and pick up supplies, sending sleek, dark vessels landside to pick up their cargo and carry out whatever business the Cordolians needed to do. To Noah's surprise, the General's people were everywhere, and they weren't just Cordolians. Aliens of all races would appear at their docking locations, and various goods would be exchanged. Food, medical supplies, and most importantly, weapons. But the Cordolians weren't accumulating weapons. They were distributing them. In all her wildest dreams, she'd never imagined she would one day find herself on a giant Cordolian battle cruiser headed towards the center of the nine galaxies. "Where are we going?" she'd asked more than once. "There is something we Cordolians have to do," Ashrael had answered. "Trust in me. I will keep you safe." Where the other human women had argued, demanded, grumbled, gossiped amongst one another, and negotiated with their mates, setting firm terms and conditions, Noah had just accepted it. She'd lost everything. She'd had no place to go and no attachments on Earth. She'd become a different person. The people who had once known her thought she was dead. And if they met her today, they probably wouldn't even recognize her. So she'd followed Ashrael and the Cordolians into the unknown, searching for something, or someone, who could anchor her to reality. Her anchor had come in the form of a sightless killer, who had consumed her with his body and his burning soul, and given himself to her in return. He'd become her constant silent shadow, a mysterious, dark, reassuring presence who found every excuse to be at her side. He was utterly obsessed with her, and he didn't care who knew it. At the same time, Noah reveled in his quiet strength, his warmth, and his fierce protectiveness. Their bond was stronger than ever, and they'd grown comfortable in each other's company. "Your connection is uncanny," Abby had told her once, just after they'd left a port called Herador, a giant Cordolian-occupied stone outcrop on a water planet. It existed in the middle of an orange sea, in which strange red fish-like animals swam in giant schools. Noah had been eager to explore and stretch her legs, so she'd been spirited away by Ashrael in slight breach of the usual protocol. He had taken her to a bustling market where they'd bought deliciously fragrant oval-shaped blue fruits. They'd attracted strange looks from the locals and Cordolians alike, but with Ashrael by her side, nobody had dared to mess with them.
You two have become like those identical twins that complete each other's sentences, Abby had told her upon their return. You're so in sync, it's almost scary. There's nothing identical about us, though, Noah had replied. Because really, she and Ashrael couldn't be more different. But she was changing. Every day she grew stronger, and she'd started to understand the Kokwi. Both Elgin and Ashrael had become her tutors, teaching her control, discipline, and strength. And what they couldn't teach her, because so much of this power was mysterious, she began to discover for herself. At one point, during one of their scheduled stops, Elgin and the general had conducted a sneaky and strange experiment on them. Unbeknownst to her, they'd sent Ashrael down on a transport to a red dust planet called Telluran 5. She'd only realized once they'd shot out of the departure dock, his aura growing fainter as their bond was stretched by distance. She'd been surprised when he'd been able to set foot on the surface of the planet and reach her with mind speech. They had to be thousands of kilometers apart. It was sure proof, he said, that their bond had grown exponentially stronger. It was different now. The bond was as necessary to her as breathing. It was a natural extension of her senses. She felt it even in her sleep. And she felt it now as Ashrael approached. She stared out of the viewing port of the lower observation deck as a sleek obsidian cruiser returned to silence, entering through a hidden docking bay.
We've almost reached Sector 1, haven't we? She knew Ashrael was there before she even saw him. His presence had become an extension of hers.
We are close.
He agreed, leaning in and wrapping his arms around her. He smelled good, like morning in a pine forest after a cool spring rain.
And remind me again, what exactly is the reason we have to travel all the way to Sector 1? Kithia is a hostile planet, isn't it?
Her suspicion grew. All of the Cordolians, even Ashrael, had been infuriatingly tight-lipped about where they were going and what they were planning. It had turned into a bit of a sport amongst the Cordolian Wives Club to try and trick the males into divulging snippets of information. The males were all hiding something, and when questioned, they all gave the same generic response.
It's for your safety. Silence is the safest place for you to be until the threat has passed.
Stubborn males, Gia's words echoed in her mind. She was right. They could be extremely stubborn. Even General Tarak, who was rumored to be uncharacteristically indulgent when it came to Abby, had put his foot down. He wouldn't budge. The human women were confined to silence until further notice, and they had no say in the matter. They were effectively prisoners, albeit very pampered and well cared for and doted upon prisoners. At least they had the run of their section of the ship. They were quite free, as long as they didn't venture into the military areas. Aaron and Sira had taken advantage of the training room, using it to work out, although Sira had refused to spar with Aaron, and this had baffled everybody until she began to show the sly fox. Sira was pregnant, and she and Zal were going to be parents.
Rihanna had acquired various bits of alien technology and appeared to be building her own personal data center. Gia had somehow infiltrated the mech workshop, and Abby was busy developing a bioplant and looking after Ami, who was growing rapidly.
The star-kissed child had recently discovered that she could babble all kinds of sounds, and she'd turned into a very vocal little monster.
Ash, Noah prompted impatiently as he nuzzled his face into her hair, inhaling her scent.
Your hair has grown, he murmured. I like the way it feels.
"What happens in Sector 1?" Noah asked again. She wouldn't allow him to distract her this time. "Why have you been acting all quiet and dark and brooding recently?" At times, his aura would grow bleak and stormy, and she'd struggle to reach him through their bond. It had been happening more frequently of late, but Ashrael was as good at guarding his secrets as he was at seducing her. And he had many, many secrets. Of that she had no doubt.
"It is not for you to worry about," he replied, going still.
For a moment, he simply held her as they watched the distant stars.
"In a short while, I will have to go to Kithia."
"To Kithia?" A chill entered Noah's heart. For some time now, a sense of foreboding had been creeping up on her.
It had to do with Ashrael's growing quietness, his pensiveness, the way he looked at her sometimes, as if he was trying to absorb every last little thing about her.
It was the stillness in his aura, the wistfulness in his voice. "Why do you have to go to Kithia?"
"There is unfinished business on Kithia, and I am a part of it. Do not worry about it. You will be safe."
"And what about you?"
She didn't like the thought of him going into danger. She didn't like it one bit.
"I know that place, like the back of my hand. I will be gone before they can even comprehend what has happened."
"What's going to happen?"
"I can't say, and it's not for you to worry about."
"Ashrael," she growled, growing restless. She didn't like this at all. Her disquiet was partly driven by fear. What if...
"What if you don't come back to me?"
She blurted the thought before she even realized she'd put it into mind speech.
"I have to come back to you," he assured her. "Trust me, my love. You are more necessary to me than breathing." "Do not worry," he said, his voice a gentle whisper in her mind. "Our bond is stronger than ever. You will be able to reach me, even from here. I'm not leaving you."
"Better not be," she murmured, as he gently grabbed her shoulders and spun her around. "I'll come for you if you do anything stupid." She closed her eyes and tried something Elgin had explained to her in theory. She gathered her Kokwi, harnessing her energy and concentrating it into a long, narrow shape. Then, she used it like a whip, curling it around Ashrael's waist, drawing him towards her. "Ah," he exclaimed, his voice full of approval. "You have started to learn Quacha." He leaned into her as she slid the tendril of energy up and down his body, snaking it beneath his robes, feeling him. He practically purred with pleasure. "Quacha?"
"Adding density to the Kokwi, moving it as if it were an extension of your own body. Even the mistress cannot do it. I certainly can't."
"And here I thought you were the expert when it came to this kind of thing."
"My abilities are limited mostly to sensory functions, and to what I can do within myself. Second sight, speed, strength, invisibility, sensing the intentions of others. And Kim. I can't read thoughts, and I can't move or manipulate the Kokwi so well. They destroyed my sight at birth to enhance my senses, and they sealed many of my channels, leaving me with only the talents they deemed necessary for a killer to possess. They wanted me dangerous, but not too dangerous. They wanted me controlled, but not too controlled."
"Oh, Ash." She kissed his cheek, sorrow welling up inside her. Although he spoke of these things as if they were no big deal, she ached at the thought of Ashrael being forced into a life of terrible servitude. How he hadn't ended up a complete sociopath was a miracle in itself.
"Don't you ever feel sorry for me," he whispered,
bringing his lips to hers. He kissed her gently, tasting her, teasing her.
I don't deserve it.
Oh, shut up, she retorted, bringing the long tendril of her invisible energy up to his neck. She slid it along his shoulders, curling it around his chest and neck. If I want to care about you, then I will. I can't help it if the thought of you suffering makes me sad.
Only you would care so much for a wretch like me.
Likewise. She exerted just a little more pressure, applying downwards force, testing him. She smirked as the surprised expression on his face turned to amusement. He grinned, his fangs flashing in the dim starlit room. They were alone in the viewing port, and the silence was blissful.
Are you trying to say something, my love?
Just testing.
You are not yet strong enough to do that, although you have improved immensely.
His voice was loaded with approval. But there are easier ways to bring me to my knees.
Oh, yeah? All you have to do is ask.
She withdrew her coquille then, because her concentration was beginning to waver, and she couldn't hold the vine-like form for too long.
Ask?
He dropped to his knees, unleashing his coquille, which was normally tightly controlled. She'd seen him do strange things with it. There were times when he could make himself almost invisible in a room full of people. Sometimes she swore he did it just for kicks, startling his fellow Cordolians when he abruptly dropped his intricate cloaking. But he never hid from her. He couldn't. She would always be able to find him through the bond. Ashrael tucked his thumbs under the flexible waistband of her loose trousers, pressing his lips to the skin below her navel.
Ask.
Then, I'm asking, she whispered, her voice quivering. She lost control of her coquille completely, as lust rose within her, consuming her thoughts. He planted slow, wet kisses on her skin, pulling down her trousers so that they pooled around her ankles. Her panties were next to fall, leaving her bare-assed and shivering slightly in the cool air. Goosebumps rose all over her skin. Her pussy throbbed with sudden, overwhelming need. She placed her hands on his head, tracing over his beautiful, intricate braids, running her fingers down his temples, over his pointed ears, across his sculpted cheekbones. She loved how alien and exotic he looked. His appearance told no lies. There was no way he could be mistaken for anything else but a fast, deadly, silent predator.
Ask,
he insisted, cupping her ass with his large hands. He inhaled deeply, his kisses trailing just a little bit lower until he reached the soft tuft of hair between her legs. His tongue darted out, cheekily tracing the sensitive skin above her clit, but avoiding that deliciously charged area for now.
I'm asking you, Ash.
What do you want?
I want you to...
She closed her eyes.
Hmm?
Oh, she moaned, as he briefly denied her what she needed most. Please, Ash.
His tongue darted out, finding her tender nub. Noah whimpered as a jolt of pleasure shot through her body and down her legs, making her quiver.
This is what you like, isn't it?
Cheeky, impossible man.
Yes, she sighed, her breaths becoming shallow. Please.
Again?
She nodded furiously, her fingers twining with his braids as he sucked gently on her clit. Her world exploded into bliss.
Oh, fuck,
she sighed, her brain going into sensory overload. Because she could feel his energy rippling all over her, and it was full of satisfaction and need. She could feel his arousal, and it was making her even more horny.
Yes,
he agreed, pleasuring her again and again until she could take it no more. Her kakui escaped her, radiating throughout the room, swirling wildly as he ran the tip of his warm tongue over her tender flesh. She was shaking all over, and she was definitely no longer cold. Her skin was slick with sweat. Her breaths came in tiny whimpering gasps, and her knees were threatening to give way.
I can't take it anymore. Please, Ash.
What do you want?
Please,
she begged.
I want to.
He slid his finger into her pussy and fucked her gently with it as he drew his tongue across her clit. He held her on the edge, between arousal and climax, denying her what she craved most. Noah moaned in frustration and pleasure.
I want to do this, he growled.
And before she knew what was going on, he had withdrawn, risen to his feet, and pulled her into his arms, and they were moving in a blur. She found herself pressed up against the cold, hard surface of the viewing port, looking out towards the stars. Ashrael's body was wrapped around hers, and somewhere between there and here, he'd discarded his dark Cordolian robes and become naked.
I ran out of patience, he whispered,
his voice sinfully dark and velvety like molten chocolate. He pressed her against the window, his strong hand encircling her neck from behind as he entered her, lifting her slightly with his artificially enhanced arm. His cock was there, sliding up inside her, parting the moist folds of her pussy as he took her, possessing her completely, consuming her mind, body, and soul as he fucked her. His thrusts grew wilder, his movements more savage, his lovemaking filled with reckless abandon.
Noah pressed her hands against the window, her hot breath steaming the transparent surface as she stared out at the stars, becoming lost in Ashrael and the universe as their energies merged.
And when they came, their voices joining in perfect primal harmony, the stars seemed to blur and shift and reset themselves again, and their bond, as powerful as it was, grew just that little bit stronger. Chapter 25
I feel sick,
Noah said, as Ashrael ran his fingers through her hair. She wasn't entirely sure of the exact numbers. She had no concept of time anymore. But it had probably been months since they'd left Earth, and her wavy mahogany-colored hair had grown out nicely, reaching the nape of her neck. He loved playing with her dark strands, often twisting them into impossibly complicated braids that he then undid, brushing them out with his fingers until there was no trace of his original handiwork.
You are not well?
He asked, radiating concern. He placed his hands over hers.
In what way?
There's a strange pressure in my head. It's like having a migraine, only it's not painful. It's as if...
She struggled to find the right words to describe exactly what she was feeling.
It's like I'm standing inside a vacuum, and the only thing stopping my brain from being sucked out and dispersed is my skull.
Have you spoken to Elgin about this?
Ashrael's voice was sharp with worry.
I have, she admitted, squeezing his hand. He said it's definitely something to do with the Kakui, but he's not entirely sure what it could be.
He told me that sometimes... funny things happen when people with the talent get close to Kithia.
The dark planet has some kind of innate power of its own.
She turned and studied his face in fascination, wondering if he was a throwback to some ancient powerful line. After all, he was different to the other Cordolians, both in appearance and ability. He said that's the reason the Zor came to your planet in ancient times and enslaved the Cordolian race.
That's a common and fanciful myth, Ashrael said. But I'm not interested in ancient history